This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Because today, right here on Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show, we're taking a stand. We're not just talking statistics. We're sharing stories, real heartfelt stories from people all around the globe who have been touched by a brain tumor. It's time to raise our voices and spread the word. By listening in, you're joining a movement to make a difference.
Hello.
Hi, Natalie. Thank you so much for coming on for Brain Tumor Awareness Month and share your experience.
Okay, not a problem. It's an important topic because I guess like anything, there's so many varieties, variations that no story is really ever the same.
Yeah, no, it's not at all. Should we go back to 2009, which is when you were diagnosed with an acoustic neuroma?
The tumor's completely gone now. So yeah, I was actually diagnosed it about 8 weeks before it got... They had to leave a tiny bit on because it was so attached to the nerves in my face by that point that if they had taken it off, I might have been left with Bell's palsy. So they were like, let's just leave a little bit on and you're going to be scanned regularly. And our hope is that because we've taken the majority of it away, 95% of it, that bit would just die. And it did. It just disappeared into my body, I guess. I got rid of it myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, it got completely removed, thankfully.
Let's go back to where you were having an ear infection. Take us back to when that all started.
So it would have been early 2000s, and I just had this really awful ear infection. And normally, if you get ear infections, you've always had ear infections. It tends to be your Achilles heel. So it was a little bit strange to be like 20 and all of a sudden getting an ear infection. Anyway, I went and got what you needed to clear it up, but my hearing never properly came back. And so I kept pushing my doctor. I was like, no, my hearing's still not back. Oh, I've got another ear infection. And they were just like, yeah, it's just something that you're going to have to deal with. Your sinus tubes might be a bit full and it takes a while to clear out and so on. 7 years felt a long time for those tubes to be full. And my hearing was getting worse and worse. I had hearing tests and they were like, your hearing is a bit bad, but it's probably because of these infections. It was actually a move to London and a change in GP where I went, well, here with an ear infection, let me give you a little bit of a backstory about this. And he was like, okay, that's just bizarre because infections clear up or it's not an infection. I'm like, that's what I thought, but I'm not a doctor, so I've just been doing what I'm told. Went for more hearing tests. And he's like, yeah, your hearing's really deteriorating. I'd like to do a scan. I had a scan done actually a few weeks before I was due to get married. And I went and saw him afterwards. He goes, yes, we found something. Don't worry about it. Go enjoy your wedding. Have your honeymoon. We'll see you when you get back. So I just thought, oh, it's cool. It's going to be something that's by the by. He seems quite casual about it. By this point in my life, I'd already had two life-saving operations. So I just took it. Was like, oh, he seemed quite cool and casual, so I've got nothing to worry about. Came back from, had my wedding. We actually, the honeymoon was later on the next year, and saw a couple of weeks later. But because he'd been so casual, I went on my own. And so I went to have this meeting, which ended up being with my doctor, two brain surgeons, and some other specialists. And I went into this room where they had really serious faces. I was like, oh, okay, I think this is a bit more serious than I thought. And then they brought up my scan, which had a tumor the size of an orange in my head. And they're like, yeah, so we need to get this removed quite quickly because you can't have radiotherapy because there's nowhere for it to grow and then shrink. We need to surgically remove it. You've basically got a brain tumor, but it's benign because you would have had this since birth based on the size of it. And we need to get you in the next 6 weeks. Otherwise, you could have a stroke. Like, my face was involuntarily twitching a lot by that point, not just because of the news, but just generally everyday life, because it was just me pushing on everything in my face.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you could have a stroke if we don't get it removed.
Do you feel appreciative? Are you appreciative that he didn't tell you before your wedding, or I would have liked to have known, or are you actually,
no,
it's probably a good idea?
He didn't.
Yeah.
Because it would have just, I'm divorced now anyway, but it would have just put a bit of a...
So much pressure, yeah.
It just wouldn't have been a celebration at the time. And I'm appreciative that he read the room and thought she needs a good party first before we get serious.
Mm.
It was the news bombshell was dropped. And then it felt like too long before I found out when my operation was going to be. So I had to let work know this was going to happen, but I couldn't let them know when.
Mm.
And so no one could organize anything really because I didn't know when I was going to have this operation.
Yeah.
Every work was great in terms of we're just going to have to deal with what you do know. Christmas was awful because we found out sort of November. And so it would have been 2008 that I found out, but in 2009 it got removed. It was a very short window. So Christmas is awful because I think everyone was like, let's just pretend this news hasn't happened. And I'm like, in the next few weeks, I'm going to have brain surgery or I could die. So I don't feel very Christmassy. But I also was really conscious about other people were just getting on with their lives, which they absolutely should.
Were you fearful? Because you don't know much about brain tumors at first until it happens to you. And you think, you hear that and you think, oh my gosh, am I going to die? Because it sounds so extreme, doesn't it? Yeah.
Because we got a really good detailed letter with the percentages and chances. And it was a really low chance that I would not survive the operation. I knew if I had one, I'd survive it. I'd survived them before. It was more the fact they told me if I didn't have one. And it was that timeline that worried me because I had physical symptoms. Not only was I completely more or less deaf in one ear, my face was twitching all the time and it was getting worse. And I think that was made worse by the stress that I was feeling. And I know stress makes everything worse. And but it was this vicious cycle, and it was just trying to not bring everyone else down whilst going, I actually am not okay, and I still have this whole mental load of trying to sort out work, how much time I might need off afterwards. I was living in London at the time with my then husband. It's not cheap, trying to work out, I've only got X amount of holiday I can take, because we didn't have decent sick pay. I worked in recruitment. It was awful. And so it was like trying to work out how long I could afford to have off to recuperate without knowing what recuperation was going to look like. So for me, anything like limbo land and the unknown, I find really tricky to deal with. I think most people do. But I think where I've had operations and long recovery times before, I'm like, I know that it could take a while. So it's like the worst. Not going to necessarily. Funny enough, I did.
Yeah. I suppose like recruitment, because I used to do recruitment, and like you're constantly under a target you have to get. So you feel like you've got to fill all this. And so to know you've got to go away, that must, you're definitely in a job that you're going to be thinking, I can't not be there. I need to be there. Yeah. I'm not going to earn any. Yeah, that must have been an extra.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who gonna give
and
that
will
to?
The person who's looking after my desk look after it in the way that it would mean I can come back and it will be nurtured and I can continue to grow it. I was in education recruitment as well. So it started from zero every September.
Yeah.
So it was stressful enough. So a lady who used to work for the company came back. She was at university and actually it fell at quite a nice time where she wasn't gonna be in uni. So she came back And I trusted her implicitly and ran my desk for a couple of months. And then I did a phased return to get back into it. And it was actually the commute that killed me the most. That was so tiring to do because I think you feel more on high alert that the world is different. You've got a different perspective on the world now.
Yeah.
Because when I went in, I had some hearing in my ear, but it was almost like it was an annoying amount because I couldn't make anything out, but I knew something was happening. Whereas because they removed the whole of my inner ear because it was damaged by the tumor, gave it to medical science, so I feel it went to a good place. I was completely deaf, and that was a brand new thing of not knowing where sound was coming from. It was just because my left ear can hear. It doesn't necessarily mean it's coming from the left.
Yeah.
It was just a bizarre change of circumstances. So, yeah, I was grateful that doctor didn't drop it on me at that time. And I'm grateful. It was all NHS. I was grateful for the amazing care that I had. I was at the Royal Free Hospital, and I was only in hospital for 7 days and actually had my own room for the last 3 or 4. So I felt really blessed that I had some of my own space and stuff, and I recovered quite nicely and quickly.
What was the treatment that you had?
They went through the back of the ear, chipped away at the skull. I guess they drain it and then bring out the sac. I didn't ask that much information.
Keep it to yourselves.
I doubt they burst the balloon in your head. I think it's a bit more technical. And then they took back from my thigh to put the skull back together and stitch me up. So I've got a gorgeous higher hairline, only slightly, you wouldn't know, and scar that just follows the top of my ear all the way around where they must have just flapped it open. It feels weird thinking that someone did that when I was asleep. It was supposed to be, I think they said it was going to be an 8 to 10 hour surgery, and it ended up being 15, I guess, because it was so entangled with lots of stuff in there. But it would have been in there for a good 20 odd years. It had made its home. So, yeah. And I was pleasantly surprised that I was out within a week.
What was your feeling after you woke up?
I woke up relieved that I woke up. I'm like, thank goodness I've survived again. The weirdest thing for me was actually the spinal fluid drain. Oh, my goodness. And it's in your lower back. And it's the most uncomfortable thing in the world. I thought my head was going to hurt.
Yeah.
But it was actually that spinal drain that's draining fluid away from your brain that was the most uncomfortable thing to navigate. Mm. That and the fact that they put the bandage on really tight. Oh. They were worried that I couldn't open my eyes properly. I'm like, no. You put the bandage on so tight, I can't lift my eyebrows up. I didn't bear being at home and it taking a couple of days for me to get the sort of painkillers and medication that they wanted me to take, like steroids and stuff, to try and build up my strength. So you don't realise the major surgery you've had because it's in such a small place, whereas previously I'd had bowel surgery, so it was really evident that I'd had major surgery and I couldn't move around properly. But because this was in my head, the rest of my body was all right. And so I really struggled to take the right things at the right time. So I was quite violently sick for a few days while I was trying to work out, all right, take the steroid then, and then the tramadol then, and then that then. But once got into the routine of sort of eating and so I just slept a lot for the first. But my mum came and looked after me for a few days. And I don't think she's so great. She's always looked after me after my major ops. And so I think she's just used to knowing what I need. Phased back at work within 12 weeks. So I did like half days for the first couple of weeks and then tried to do a couple of full days. But I was fully back at work within 12 weeks.
Wow.
And that was mainly because of the industry, money. There was no other choice, really. But I couldn't wait for the weekends just because I needed to sleep for 48 hours to be able to do it again. And so it probably took about 6 months to properly physically and mentally back in the world.
You were working in London?
Yeah.
So where you were having...
Yeah, I was living in London.
Yeah, so you had the problem with your hearing because you've lost this hearing. What was that like? Because London is noisy and it's full on when you're doing the route in the morning and in the evening. So What did you do to try and help yourself? Did you put, I don't know, headphones or something? Just because it must have been a real change for you.
I guess because I had half of my hearing, I only hear half of what everyone else hears. Prior to actually having the operation was worse. Because like I said, I still had that muffling going on. I guess what people would describe as tinnitus almost. I had some sort of form of hearing in there, but it wasn't useful. It was annoying more than anything. So actually when I had that, it was harder to listen anyway. When it went, I could hear more because everything was clearer. I find being in, if I go out of an evening and we're in a bar, in a pub or whatever, I can't hear anything. Like I have to, unless you're talking to me directly and facing me so I can lip read. If I'm out and it's busy, my friends know that we probably just can't hear anything. Even work-wise, if I'm at a conference or there's networking, I really struggle. And I'm not forwards or coming backwards saying, sorry, I'm deaf. You're going to have to shout at me or come onto my good side so I can have a decent conversation with you. And the amount of times, because when I was in London, I used to run a lot, that I almost got hit by a car because I just didn't hear it coming. So those are a few things that I struggle with. Even when I'm at home, if I hear a noise, I have to go to my partner. I'm like, is that all the house or is that next door? Yeah. Or is it outside? Or am I just hearing things? And he just tells me what direction it's come from. So whether I need to tell my son to be quiet or ignore it. But that's a challenge. But friends and family know.
Was your son, was he born before this happened or after?
No, after. He's partially sighted in one of his eyes. So we say that we're brilliant. Double act. I'm like, he can't see, I can't hear. You need to really position yourself properly.
Yeah.
So I'm like, Alfie, what did you say? He goes, who are you talking about? It can be quite amusing, but the great thing is because we've both got things, we actually really understand each other, if it's slightly differently. So if I go, can't you see that? He'll go, Mum, that is ableist. I'm like, and then he'll be like, Mum, I'm shouting for you. I'm like, shouting for a deaf person. That's a great idea. So we do rib each other a little bit.
Yeah.
But in a lovely.
Yeah.
But yeah, he knows nothing of it. And actually, it was only after I'd had a few scans to know that it was going away that it was like, okay, it's going away. So the chances are I'm not going to have more surgery in the future or radiotherapy or any of that. So we decided that try for a child.
What would you say to someone else that may have the same tumor or go through what you have?
Yeah, the first thing I'd say is you know your body. So if something is going, acoustic neuromas tend to be benign, so they're slow growing, and by the time they make themselves present, they're quite big. So if you, whether it's ear infections or you notice your hearing's getting worse or whatever, just go and speak to someone, get hearing tests, get it, start the ball rolling. Because it took me 7 years and I touch wood, it wouldn't take someone else that long because it's been a long time. There's more information out there now, but it's your body best if something's going different. And if you don't like what someone's telling you, go find someone else. Because I wish I had just tried a different doctor. Might have been caught sooner or whatever. And then if it ends up being something, your hearing doesn't necessarily get permanently affected like mine did. That was purely because I was not lucky with having the right GP listening to me, ironically, at the time. There are so many more options with hearing aids and devices now that you can probably get your hearing back in some way, whether that's artificially or naturally. Either way is good. My dad's hearing aids, he's got this new hearing aid that he's going to be trying out that actually goes from it throws hearing from his good ear around to his bad ear, although he's got two bad ears, but one, the hearing aid works better than the other. So there is so much technology out there now, and I think there's more ambassadors or people that are showing themselves on TV and that are deaf. So if you do happen to become part of the deaf community, there's quite a lot of us. It's fine. There's lots of hearing jokes we can make at each other's expense. It's not as enabling as I think it used to be. I was offered a cochlear implant, but they said it might not work. So I didn't go for it because I thought I don't want something else put in my head. So I've chosen to be completely deaf in my right ear because at the time there wasn't the tech that would guarantee that I could hear. But it's a problem for everyone else, not me.
Yeah. Do you find there's something? So I'm partially blind because of my surgery. And then I always think, how can I think of this being as a plus? Because I hate that I can't drive. But then I'm like, the only thing that I can be chuffed about is when it's really bright, when it's like just on the horizon and everything, it always gets that little bit brighter at this time of the year and you're all blinded by it.
Yeah.
I can turn to the right and then I don't get that. Because I can't see it.
Yeah.
But do you have something similar?
Yeah. So if someone's boring me, I can just turn around and not hear them. Or if your partner snores, just lay on your other ear.
Yeah.
I sleep so soundly, I can't hear anything because I sleep on my good ear.
Oh.
So
you have to find a plus.
You have to find the plus. And also, I can find quiet time. I can find quiet spaces more easily than other people because even in the loudest spaces I can't hear. I can go sit in a busy coffee shop and get immersed in a book and not distracted by what's going on around me because I can't make it out enough to get distracted. I also feel it, I don't know if you have, but it's honed my other senses. Like my eyes are you know, my intuition and my touch and things like that, I feel they've taken a bit of power from there. Let's push a bit more to these other senses.
Yeah.
So I do feel there's other senses now in play that most people don't recognize because they've got all their essential five ones firing. Whereas I've got 4.5 and a special one. So
my reflexes are like amazing. Like you could drop something and my hand will be there already catching it. I don't know why.
Maybe.
I can't see the right side, but if it's on the left, it is. And my husband's always like, why are you so good at that? And I'm like, something's got to be good. I'm like,
100%. I just think I feel it then goes, there's that power that has to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
It does go. And I think with anyone who has a tumor of whatever sort, you could see it as you might lose something. Whether that's for a short period of time or indefinitely. But what you gain in experience and I think in gratitude for life, it just can't be replaced. I don't know about you, where I've had quite a few life-saving surgeries now, it's almost a bit of a joke in my family. The sort of way that I look at life is so different to anyone else because they've never nearly died.
Yeah.
So I do feel that you become part of a club that doesn't really get spoken about, but where you, yes, of course, you still get angry and annoyed and all those normal things, but I feel you can pull the gratitude and the silver linings out of things that other people wouldn't see because you've had to before and you're just grateful to be here to tell your story to someone else in the hope that they feel a bit less crap that they're going to be going through it as well.
Yeah. You do. Did I see you do TED Talks?
I did a talk last year. Yeah, I did.
What was that for?
So I was approached by TEDx Winchester to do a TEDx talk. I hate public speaking in front of people. So I immediately went back and went, what barrel are you trying to scrape? Who's done this to me?
Oh.
But also was also a bit, I think it's a bit starstruck in the sense that I was really proud that they thought I was good enough to get up on the stage whilst absolutely petrified that you can't say no to TED. I've said no to a lot of things when people go, oh, would you come and speak at this? No. So but when TEDx comes and you know that you've been put forward, you're like, okay, I've got to honour this opportunity. Yeah. And so it took me a while to think about what I was going to talk about because it's all about sharing an idea and sowing a seed for people to think of things a little bit differently. And so I've been in therapy for many years. And one of the things that I often talk about in therapy is about the labels that people give. And I'm always trying to shake the ones that I feel I've been society give you and how you're supposed to conform to certain things because that's a label you have. And so the theme was about reimagining. And so for me, I thought, let's talk about reimagining labels then, but more the positive ones that we get given, but how they negatively impact us. So it was more around my story about how from a very young age, I was told how strong I was, either mentally, physically, emotionally, and how that negatively impacted me because it meant I didn't ask for help. I wasn't strong enough to do it on my own. It led to bouts of depression. I ended up in a marriage that was not healthy at all. And because I was strong enough, I could get through this. I've got to be the good wife. I can't let this fail and all those types of things. But it also got me through my brain tumor, the label, because I'm a strong person. It also meant that I now can ironically compete in strong women, but I reimagined the label and repurposed it for me and how it suits me in a positive way. And strength is being brave and asking for help and realizing you can't do it all yourself.
Yeah.
And then there's another one is perfect. Oh God, you're so perfect. And then all of a sudden you're trying to live this perfectionist life, which is unattainable at the best of time, but you're burnt out just trying to be perfect at work. You're burnt out at home because you're trying to be the perfect parent or the perfect partner. You know, you're trying to portray this perfect life and have all the perfect thoughts, which it's just exhausting because all you're doing is trying to be perfect for others and not perfect for yourself.
Yeah.
Hardworking is another one. Oh, you're such a hard worker. And so you feel you've got to burn yourself out because you're the hard worker.
Mm.
You've got to work the hardest. Doesn't mean you're working the smartest. It's all those words that we think are great to give people, but sometimes have that negative undertone that people take on because that's the expectation, or they think it is the expectation, where it is within our own gift to, okay, you think I'm a hard worker. This is what that looks like to me.
Yeah. I'm going to find this on the TED Talk and then I'll put the link for the bottom of this.
Yeah, lovely. If you Google TEDx Winchester Natalie Welch, it should come up first. Then if there's anyone else, same name that's done it at Winchester. But yeah, I'd love to know your thoughts.
Yeah.
And it was interesting going through the motions of, this is my thought, it'd be great for you to, and this is why I think this and how it played out for me. It hasn't had as many views as others, but I've had some lovely messages from people that it's really resonated with. So
we always hope the right people hear it. I'm glad I did it. Yeah, you always hope that the right people hear it.
Yeah.
Not just anybody. It's like people who need it.
When they need it.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
Is there anyone you want to say thank you to while you've gone through this journey of the brain tumor world and everything else that you've gone through as well before that? Is there anyone you want to say thank you to?
Oh, the main person I'd say thank you to is my mum. She passed away in 2019 and she has always been there and has always advocated for me throughout all of my life, throughout everything that I've ever been through or was not diagnosed for at the right times. And even when I had my son and then struggled those newborn days, she would just turn up. She would just turn up and take him so that I could sleep for a few hours or have a bath or have a hot cup of tea, and showed me what unconditional love was. And so all I can hope is that I emulate that for my son and for anyone else who's in my life. But yeah, she would have been so proud of what I'm doing, how I'm speaking out and things like that. She'd also know that it's something that I'm not necessarily comfortable with telling my truth, but talking out loud. Yeah, it would be her. And I know she can hear in her own funny little way. I don't know where she is or what she's doing.
Yeah.
But it would be her. And I thank the NHS because in the end, they saved my life many times. Whilst it took a while for me to be diagnosed, they also fixed me. Dr. Saeed was my surgeon. Professor, probably. He's probably more than a doctor. But he was great. He would answer my emails. He would he was so calming at the time.
Yeah,
he was awesome. He was so gentle for someone who was about to literally chip away at my skull.
Yeah,
his actual bedside manner was awesome. Like, you can get some doctors that aren't, and surgeons that aren't like that, but they're awesome at what they do, but they don't necessarily have that customer service element, whereas he was great. And I think that's partly because he taught you have to be slightly charismatic in order to inspire others to learn brain surgery. So yeah, he was awesome.
Thank you very much for sharing your experience and being a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month.
It's been great. I appreciate the opportunity. I happened to go onto Facebook and see it. It was just a random serendipitous moment, obviously.
Thank you very much.
This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.